All right, welcome into the latest edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Paul Diener Jr. here with my guy, Jason Williams. What's up?
How you doing, son?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
I'm doing fantastic.
We're back. We're still here.
We're back. We're better than ever.
Absolutely.
Big episode. Big episode today. Huge, huge. It really is, actually. Chris Finney, who is founder of the anti-tax group Coast, has his own law firm, Finney Law Firm, is joining us. I've been told he's very controversial. Maybe he'll do something controversial here.
Ooh.
Ratings bonanza. You never know.
I'm excited about this interview. I've known Chris Finney for a long time, and he is to some people, he is a controversial figure and certainly a polarizing figure to the far left, a conservative attorney who has fought a lot of open government cases against the left at
big
City
case,
Hall.
Big cases.
Fought the streetcar and fought the parking deal and going back
jail
over
tax.
A decade ago, the jail tax. And so I'm looking forward to – one of the things I want our listeners to understand is – it's more kind of who is this guy and then that where did he grow up? How did he end up getting involved in all this to begin with? So looking forward to getting into some of that.
Yeah. And he told David Pepper to kiss his butt.
Behind.
At one point.
His backside.
A long time ago.
We'll ask him about that too.
Yeah.
And not only did he ask him to kiss his, he also, as he was saying that, patted his backside with his hand.
I like that. I think You got it. That's emphasis right there. To remind everyone, don't misconstrue it. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Add a little motion in there.
That was
a little dance move.
Back in 2006 when David Pepper, who's now the Ohio Democratic Party chairman, was running for county commissioner. And at the time, Chris Finney was on the tax levy review committee as an appointee of then Republican Commissioner Phil Heimlich. And Pepper was running against Heimlich, and Pepper questioned some of the ethical reasonings as to why Heimlich had appointed Finney to that review committee because the families, the Heimlichs and the Finney were in some kind of, they had some kind of business together at the time.
We will get into a lot of that. Plenty of interesting stories from Chris. So we got that coming up in our interview segment later on. We will have our That's So Cincinnati moments, of course, coming up later.
So Cincinnati.
There it is. Our man Phil Didion still in the ones and twos with plenty more. More drops are coming, man.
He'll be on the threes and fours, too.
Yeah, there'll be many numbers. Many numbers.
What are the ones and twos? What does that mean?
It's like the turntable. It's like the faders and stuff.
Oh, that's right. Because I don't know music. So
you don't know music. See, Richard Marx doesn't have any ones or twos. he's one and two-less. But we've got let's jump into some of the sort of interesting news. I like any time we can give people some insight into major projects and their potentially uncertain future. And there's actually a lot of that going on right now. And the dynamics are interesting right now, right, Jason? Because you have the Democrats with a lot of control now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some big projects sitting there where you would think, okay, this could be a chance for them to really make moves and have their way because they have a ton of the power. But on all of these, the music venue being amongst them, which I think updating that is important. People are wondering what's going on with that. I thought we took care of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to not be as simple as, well, Democrats have a bunch of power. They should be able to get a bunch of stuff done.
Yeah. So the Democrats locally, they took control of the Board of Commissioners again for the first time in a decade back in 2016 when Denise Driehaus was elected to she beat Dennis Dieters, giving the Democrats, her and Todd Portune at the time, control of the board. And they've continued, obviously, to hold that control. So there was a lot of thought. I remember back then I was covering that race and that election. And I remember after she got elected, the first Democratic woman elected to the Board of Commissioners, a lot of talk that, hey, now the commissioners are controlled by the Democrats, and then also you have a Democratic council and mayor and John Cranley. There were a lot of folks thinking behind the scenes, power players thinking that, like, oh, okay, now these guys, same party, they can get some things done. Well, that's not been the case. There's been a lot of headbutting on MSD. And so the reason why we're bringing this up is on the Metropolitan Sewer District, which has been a long time court battle over who runs it, who owns it. So for so long, it's been the county, been believed the county has owned it, and yet the city has run it, and those are city as city employees. So they're in the city pension program. Well, they're in mediation. They've been in mediation for the last few years, and it's in the weeds, but at the end of the day, it's been very contentious. The city, John Cranley, doesn't want to give up control to allow the county to take control of operations, because then the city would lose those employees. And the fear from John Cranley is that the pension system would just bottom out. Like it would completely mess up the city's, and it would be a financial disaster for the city. On the flip side, the agreement so far has been from and through mediation has been that the county would take over operations as well. And so the county commissioners would make the calls on rates and on what projects are getting done. But there's a certain amount of employees who would remain under the city city pension. The problem is that, let's say if one of those employees left, if they were to do that, then the county could turn around and hire that person as a county employee. And so then that starts to mess with the city pension. So there's no guarantees in place there. Ultimately, that's caused a lot of consternation between John Cranley, Todd Portoon, and Denise Driehaus. Driehaus and Portoon being on the same side with the commissioners, Cranley as the mayor. And there's been some contentious moments. I'm trying to say that it's not gone as smoothly as I think what a lot of people thought. And then it's also extended into some other realms as well. I'm not saying there's grudge holding there. There is a history between Portoon and Cranley, and that goes way back to the early 2000s. In 2000, Todd Portoon left Cincinnati City Council to become the commissioner, and he did not want John Cranley being appointed to his seat. Well, that's not his call. It was the call of the council, and the council appointed John Cranley to fill Todd Portoon's old seat. The thought being that Portoon saw this young guy coming up as a potential threat to him as maybe being the mayor someday. And Todd at one point had aspirations of being the mayor. So that caused some friction, and that friction's been off and on for the last almost two decades between those two. They have worked together on some things, but then now you're starting to kind of see some of that headbutting come out again with MSD. You're also seeing some of that headbutting, kind of these standstills come out with the Banks Music Venue, which you alluded to, that is right now is at a standstill.
How is that still at a standstill? I mean, there was just a thought that we had taken care of this. Yeah. And, the Bengals deal happened and everybody was on board. But this this was kind of the issue when you gave it to CSO, was they are not motivated to do anything quickly. They're not going to be pushing anybody because they've got venues or whatever. Not like if you gave it to Promo West, they've been itching to get in here forever and they were going to get it up as quickly as possible. So we're sitting here with this and nobody seems to be getting anything done with it. That's, you know what that is? That's so annoying.
Man, it's so Cincinnati.
And it is so Cincinnati that this is still going on and we don't have anything happening with it.
Yeah, I'm not entirely clear, kind of on the drilling down in the real nitty gritty details as to what the exact problem is. I do know on a kind of a broader level that there is headbutting there between the commissioners and John Cranley again over some differences on still maybe potentially where that should be going. The commissioners worked it out with the Bengals. I thought they did it actually a pretty good job on working things out with the Bengals, and we don't need to rehash that, but here we are. And
talking about what lot it's going to end up on? Are we really still talking about that?
I believe we are.
Ugh. All right.
And then you've got...
Now I'm getting mad. I was trying to be peaceful in here. I was just going to come in, have a nice, fun, peaceful podcast with you, Jason. We were going to smile and tell jokes and tell our That's Insanity moments. And now I'm all frustrated.
And then you also have Cranley who... You know, here's the thing. Here's the overriding issue here. This really shows that power really trumps party. And so for the folks who thought maybe, oh, now that you have establishment Democrats majority on the commission and you have an establishment Democrat in the mayor's office, which they've had for a long time, you know, now maybe they could get some things done. But I think what we're seeing here is power trumps party. And it's more about power than it is about trying to come together under, on a party line. And you on one side, you have John Cranley. To me, the common denominator here is John Cranley, who is a fiery bull in a china shop, wants it his way and has, you know, is hard. It's hard to move him off of a stance. And on the other side, you have Todd Portoon, who is very much not a hothead, but very much set in his ways and has his vision as well. And they're both at the end of the day there for the right reasons, I believe. But you have, in some ways, you have both are trying to establish their legacies. Todd certainly is trying to establish his legacy as he gets more toward being in office for almost two decades now. And you have Cranley, who is trying to establish his legacy as he faces being term limited out of the mayor's office in 2021. And in the middle, you have Denise Driehaus, who just comes along and is really known as for her civility and peacemaking and helping to bring people together on both sides of the aisle. And yet she's kind of caught up in the middle of this whole thing and trying to maneuver and help things move along.
Regardless, it's not going as well as people would hope. And that means you get a lot of nothing happening. And that is...
So Cincinnati.
That's right. It really is. All right. But look, we'll be keeping an eye on this as we continue to go forward. Jason will be writing about it. You know, Sherry Coolidge, everybody else, everybody that kind of covers things around here will be all over this stuff because it's an issue. You know, and it's funny how even when you think things are starting to move along in one direction, how all of a sudden you can be, wait, what happened with that? I thought we did that and it's not getting done. And the people that suffer are the people. I mean, it's everybody that wanted this thing, that voted for certain things, end up sitting here and not getting it because of some sort of power play or infighting or whatever it is. So we'll keep an eye on that as we keep going here. Let's get to the interview segment here. We're going to bring in Chris Finney, founder of Coast, has his own law firm, as well. They're, you know, anti-tax, lots of lawsuits, but he's, we kind of joke a controversial figure is sort of, but really is. And it grew up here, cares about certain things that he's very dedicated to in this city. And so we thought a great guy to have on, to hear a little bit more of his story. So here is Chris Finney joining us on That's Cincinnati. All right, interview time now on That's So Cincinnati, and excited about this one. We have Chris Finney with us, founder of Coast. I've been told you're controversial.
Me?
Yeah, you're supposed to be controversial. So I hope you're going to come on here and be controversial.
I think my controversial days have passed. I don't know. We'll find out.
You have been pretty quiet in recent years.
I've been very
busy. Until Texgate. And well, there you were. You showed right up in the courthouse, a big smile on your face, shaking hands with all your political enemies.
Yeah, that was really my my associate, Brian Shrive, who truly conceived of and executed the Gang of Five case. But I was riding shotgun, we might say.
You were the puppet master behind the scenes?
No, I really wasn't. I mean, Brian was running that pretty much. He, like I say, it was his idea, and I should say him and Mark Miller, and I didn't really get involved very much till the end.
There was a Mark Miller sighting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so Mark is a citizen activist. Mark was maybe the fourth member of COAST, third member of COAST. And he really has participated in all of our activities, petition drives, media events, but he likes to vindicate his rights in the courts. So he's been up to the U.S. Supreme Court, been to the Ohio Supreme Court many times, and we had the texting case in front of Judge Ruhlman, and he was our plaintiff in that case.
For those that don't know, can you just kind of sum up what COAST is and is about, just real quick?
Yeah, so 1999, COAST was formed. I think 1998 maybe was the Bengals Stadium lease, and there were a number of issues that conservatives, fiscal conservatives, were concerned about in Cincinnati, kind of culminating with the worst stadium lease in the nation.
Yeah.
And Tom Brinkman had an earlier organization called CUTS, Cincinnatians United Against Taxes and Spending. I don't know why he wanted to change the name, but that Tom's kind of, you know, flies from the seat of his pants sometime and said, well, hey, I want to do this new thing. And so we formed COAST. And the first thing he fought, which was pretty much on his own that year, was I think the zoo levy. And he won that almost single-handedly. And then we, you know, added some members and board members and grew the organization. But we've had, depending on your point of view, I think pretty dramatic success for a citizen activist group at the local level on a sustaining basis. So it's now been 20 years that it's been around, and we've defeated, I think it was a $4 billion transportation tax.
Metro moves.
We defeated
the jail tax,
which was really important. And I want to say on that issue, I can't claim COAST credit for that alone. Chris Smitherman and the NAACP played a huge role, and that was a big part for COAST. So, gosh, in 07, so about 8 years after we were formed.
Got crushed at the ballot.
Christopher Smitherman approached us and asked to form what I thought was a really important coalition, left-right coalition, which is very unusual in Cincinnati. You know, you see it up in Washington, you'll even see it in Columbus, that left-right will form various coalitions on issues. In Cincinnati, people are really territorial. So the Democrats do their thing, the Republicans, and they don't help each other much on issues. And it was really powerful on about a 4 or 5 year basis for the COAST and the NAACP to work together on a number of issues, and the stadium or the jail tax was the first of those, and was really eye-opening for me to work across the aisle. I eventually served on the board of the NAACP for I think 6 or 7 years, and got to meet a lot of wonderful people, but really be exposed to a whole new set of ideas and problems that we don't see on a day-to-day basis in Anderson Township.
Look, can we go back? And when COAST first formed, how did you even get involved? Like, how did you even know Tom Brinkman? How did you get connected there to, what got you involved in this really to begin with?
Well, Jason, you make me feel very old right now. But Tom and I met probably when I was still in college.
Okay.
And
at Xavier.
Oh, I can tell you where we met. This is going to really blow your mind. When I was in college at Xavier, so I'm barely 18, I'm probably still 17, and Tom was originally, I think, the chairman of the John Anderson for President campaign, and I got involved in that campaign, and I think after he dropped out of the primary and went on to the general, I was the Hamilton County chairman at 18 years old for the John Anderson for President campaign with a little office down on 4th Street, and that's how I originally met Tom. His father, Tom's father, owned a – web printing company, so an old magazine printing company. And I needed a job at one point in my many jobs through college, and I went and worked the first shift as what they call a fourth pressman, which people who are in the printing business think that's really funny because there's only three pressmen, so a fourth pressman is pretty low on the totem pole. But I jogged paper. You know what that is?
No.
That's where you do this. You know, you pull it off the printer and you stack
yeah.
it.
And we don't have video, Mr. Finney, so.
So I jogged paper.
He's shaking his hands.
And I filled up ink wells with ink and cleaned off the rollers, the rubber versus the metal roller with the ink that would roll through. And I cleaned those with turpentine or something from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. And I ate lunch off the roach coach. And that would be the little aluminum wagon that would pull up outside.
Oh,
I only had that job for maybe 9 months or a year or something. But I worked for Tom's dad's company, and then we were in the Young Republicans together and did a bunch of other stuff. And then eventually, you know, it led to – and then Mark Miller, I worked professionally.
Mark, let me mention – so Mark Miller – by the way, Tom Brinkman, longtime state rep, very conservative activist. Mark Miller is – someone you see his name a lot on a lot of the coast lawsuits, the open government lawsuits, open meetings types of lawsuits. So go ahead.
So I was hired early on. One of my many jobs was to run petition drives. So I used to professionally run petition drives, getting signatures on ballot issues. And Mark Miller was one of my recruits from Xavier High School, and I met him there. So kind of that was the formation of my relationships that develop coast, but you're taking me way back now, and nobody's ever going to be able to follow all this.
And then so fast forward up to, I guess, probably what, a decade later, more than that, right? This is
Tom, our relationship continued for many, many years, doing lots of stuff together, Republican stuff. And I was a little bit more mainstream at that time than Tom was. But he recruited me and said, hey, we need to do this coast thing. And we were all upset about a number of issues where, you know, these were the Bob Taft years where the Republicans really didn't act like Republicans on tax and spending issues, and we thought that there more encouragement was needed on that side of the equation.
You know, you're obviously very prominently Republican, but your parents are Democrats.
Yeah, I was raised.
How did that happen?
Well, it was probably just youthful rebellion. I don't know.
Come from a big family, right?
From a family of seven kids. And actually, I'm not sure my dad would admit this, but I think most of the kids are Republicans today.
Okay. Grew up in Kennedy Heights.
I think originally I was born in Oakley. I don't remember that. We had a home on Beaver Avenue in Pleasant Ridge for a short while that I lived till I was five. And then the rest of the years I grew up. Till I was, 18 at Beachview Circle in Kennedy Heights. And then I told my dad one day, I said, Dad, I'm going to move out. He said, good. He said, can I help you pack?
This when you were a kid?
Well, I was 18 years old.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
I'm scarred permanently by that comment even to this day.
And how did you become a Republican? And your dad?
Probably from the John Anderson experience. I kind of transitioned from Democrat to Republican, I guess.
But your dad, I mean, he was very active in the Democratic Party. Is he still to this day? Or?
Oh, I mean, he'll give me my dad's 86, I think, right now. So he gives me the razz on various issues from time to time.
But he worked on Democratic campaigns.
Oh, yeah. So we grew up with campaigning for David Mann, Pete Strauss. Those are the ones I remember. Tim Burke was a friend of my dad's, and I think maybe lived in Kennedy Heights at the time. I kind of remember him and his wife from growing up, and maybe their kids. So we were all kind of contemporaries. But yeah, my dad was he was a consultant to the old, not Tom Lucan, but the other Lucan. Who was the other
Charlie?
Jim Lucan, who was a mayor before Tom, and had been let me say pretty active in Democrat politics. But I went the other direction.
Wow.
Well, so bring me up to let's go to current events a little bit more. I mean, what is the most prominent thing that you're concerned about, or your group is, you know, Coast is concerned about right now? I mean, what is happening right now that has your eyes and your attention?
Well,
we're all calm.
Coast hasn't really been that active except was it last year, 2 years ago? They were really had a resurgence with the sales tax for the county. I mean, that was amazing. We doing the sales tax campaign in 07, I was very active in that. And I don't think, unless you're actively involved in that, to understand how much work that is and the short period of time in which it has to be done is amazing to be able to do it on a volunteer basis, or mostly volunteer basis. They did the same thing in 16, I guess, or was it 16 with the county sales tax and shut that down a second time. And that was really remarkable. So
that was wasn't that last summer? It was last summer.
17? Okay.
No, it was in 18. When 18? Denise Driehaus and Todd Fortune.
Right. I guess you're right. Yeah, it was just
voted to raise the sales tax, and this was last summer.
Right. That's how uninvolved I was in that particular one.
And Republicans got upset about
that
it.
Case,
it created a groundswell.
Yeah, in that case, the establishment Republican Party got behind that as well. So that was encouraging, right? It was last year. And then the streetcar continues to fire up our folks. That is, a source of the gift that keeps on giving, sort of the follies of the liberal Democrats of learning the lesson of non-restrained spending, first of all, and secondly, preventing it from happening again, because there's people that want to take that, you know, all over town, and we can't afford it. It'd be billions and billions of dollars to run that thing all over town.
I want to ask you, do you feel like you get a bad rap as being a conservative? I mean, you guys will take on Republicans at times. Out in the suburbs, you take on a lot of Republicans in a lot of these small governments, and you've partnered with the NAACP. Obviously, you came from a very Democratic home, and you know, you talked about some of these bipartisan initiatives.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you're going to be involved in any kind of politics, any divisive issue, you're going to have supporters and detractors. But what I will tell you is that in the long run, what we find is that people who are involved on either side appreciate the fact that you sacrifice and will take the time to participate in the debate if you do it in a responsible and civil way. So the key, I think, is to try to influence policy from a policy perspective and to do so knowing that, you know, there's going to be another day to fight on other issues.
Along those lines, Chris Wetterich, I thought, did a really good piece on this, talking to you after the Gang of Five text case decision was made by Judge Ruhlman back last month, March, where he talked to you about how, Coast attorneys will – sue, but they typically go after, in the city at least, go after the far left. And I took from that, I hear this a lot, that you only do it for the money. What do you say to that?
You know, there's a million responses to that. But first of all, I stand in a courtroom and there's an attorney from the city. And there's a judge and a clerk, mm-hmm. and there's somebody else, you know, and everybody in the room is getting paid, right, by somebody. And they turn to me and they say, Chris, you're only here for the money. I said, well, everybody else is here for charity? I mean, yeah. What are you doing? So secondly, we have broadly had amazing success, even on a national level, in affecting public policy using litigation as a tool. Mm-hmm. And there are literally thousands and thousands of man hours over a period of years, meaning a major commitment of my firm in order to sustain this kind of litigation. And the legislatures in each case passed a law. So I don't just win because some judge says, hey, you get paid. We usually get paid because the legislature, either Congress or the state legislature, said in this kind of litigation, we want to encourage litigants who otherwise couldn't afford to fight, you know, David versus Goliath, to do that by getting paid. And we simply are using the tools that have been given to us to do that. But if we didn't do that, it simply wouldn't be sustainable except to do these things occasionally or once in a while. And, you know, we are, you know, I have bills to pay. I have associates to pay. I have secretaries and paralegals and administrators and rent to pay. And
you wouldn't get paid if you didn't find anything,
if we
right?
didn't if win, didn't right? Find- so, yeah, it's so funny when people say, well, you file frivolous litigation. I say, well, if I won all my cases, then they weren't frivolous, right? The judge found
well, there was nothing frivolous about you guys going after a majority of council members on breaking open meetings laws. That is basic government.
Right. So let me just tell you
government responsibility.
Let me tell you about two cases. One was the Gang of Five case. So narrowly, you know, we caused a lot of grief for P.G. Sittenfeld and Greg Landsman and so on. But more broadly, we helped establish an important principle under Ohio open meetings and public records law that you can't have meetings by text and you can't hide texts relating to public business. Mm-hmm. And that's really important when it comes to your job and when it comes to any citizen activist that feels like they're being homered by their local city council. The other case, we actually just argued, Kurt Hartman, former Judge Hartman, is back of counsel with my office, and we just had a good oral argument about 3 weeks ago at the Ohio Supreme Court over a really important question, which is, can public bodies take a vote by a secret ballot?
And this is from a small village out in suburban Cleveland.
Yeah, we had a client who called us out of this. It's like the Indian Hill, apparently, of Cleveland, mm-hmm. very wealthy suburb of Cleveland, and they had a secret vote on an issue. They passed unmarked, so they didn't put Jason Williams voting. They just passed unmarked ballots up to the city solicitor who read the things and said, here's how they voted. Mm-hmm. We lost at the trial court. We lost at the Court of Appeals. They said secret ballots in Ohio are perfectly fine. Now, that's a good example. If I wasn't getting paid, if we didn't have a possibility of fee shifting in that case, I wouldn't be able to afford the time and effort to take that up to the Ohio Supreme Court. But if we win, there, you know, it affects narrowly that small village up in northeast Ohio. But more broadly, don't you think it's an important principle that we say that the Ohio legislature and school boards and city councils throughout Ohio can't take secret votes? Mm-hmm. To me, it's a really important principle.
It's setting precedent and
open
government.
So some of the stuff, you know, what I find in the law is that sometimes you can get paid very well to do things that don't matter a lot, and other times you get paid really poorly to do things that really are important. And fortunately, in the case of public interest law, which our firm does some of, we're able to do both. We're able to broadly impact public policy, and we're able to get paid for that. Now, do I wish that, like in the Gang of Five case, they could shift that fee to the people who actually did the bad deeds? Yeah, I wish they legislature had written the law that way, but they didn't. Yeah.
Why be partisan, though? Why not? If you're a government, if you're for government transparency, why not go after both sides?
Well, actually, we have. So during the jail tax, Cy Lease, the sheriff then, was using his office to campaign with tax dollars, mm-hmm. which is illegal, and it's unconstitutional. And we sued actually in two forums to stop that and did.
And you have in the suburbs, like I mentioned earlier,
we've taken on conservative school boards and liberals, and you know the idea behind our so there's really a distinction between, by the way, my firm that occasionally has clients other than Coast mm-hmm. in the public interest litigation and Coast, but for both of them, typically, you know, we like the idea that we are a watchdog that politicians are concerned might hold them accountable. I mean, it's important not just the act of suing somebody and winning, but think about the intimidation, the 100 times that we don't have to sue because somebody says, well, we can't do that because these idiots at Coast are going to sue us if we do. So it has a important impact far beyond the litigation that we actually conduct, and I'd like to believe that there's a real public benefit from that. And we don't We do. I mean, we're a conservative group, certainly, and I've told Democrats who want to do this, I'll be glad to tell you our techniques and show you. And, you know, I think people should do it on both sides and hold the politicians accountable. But we have, in fact, done that.
So I'm not go ahead.
Go ahead. I think I was going to try to wrap it up, which only means you're about to ask a question. So I'm just going to let you go ahead.
Sorry. So I've known you for a while, and I've never. Now that we have Phil rolling. rolling the audio, I can ask you this now. You, back in 2006, showed up at a press conference when David Pepper was running for commissioner, and you were really upset and told him to kiss your rear end.
Yeah, I was not happy.
Talk about that. And also, are you – I don't know that side. Like, are you – have you kind of settled down more? Or like, I don't know the hot-tempered Chris Finney.
Yeah, well, that's good that you don't. Yeah. I'd like to think that I'm even-tempered. But, yeah, David pushed my buttons that particular day, and I let my temper get the better of me. I have significantly changed my public involvement, not necessarily just because of that, but just a lot of things in life.
Yeah.
And, like to believe I keep that kind of thing in perspective now.
Well, because kind of the work that you do, you're going to get, you took on the streetcar, you take on all these controversial issues. You're going to get a lot of pushback.
Yeah, and I do. I mean, a lot of these guys want to make it very personal. You know, Chris Finney did this or that. And some of that may be deserved over the years. But, we've tried to battle the dragons. And when you do that, you draw some blood from time to time. But like I say, you get a over the years, you get a perspective of what's important.
Yeah.
And in that particular instance, he was challenging just my business involvement with Phil Heimlich, and I took it real personal that they were questioning.
So
I had spent years doing volunteer activities, making no money from doing any of this.
And you were on, at the time, you were on the tax levy review committee,
right? And they said that my involvement on the tax levy review committee somehow was impacted because I was a business partner of Phil's, which it was a volunteer activity. I made no money from any of this stuff ever, and when you work very hard coming from Kennedy Heights for your success, it's really deeply offensive to have somebody who maybe doesn't understand how you got there to question your ethics when, I was just volunteering my time. But some of that shows kind of the thankless nature of public involvement. And like I say, you need to keep all that in perspective. But I really don't. David had a tough race that he was running, and I don't really question what he did. I let my temper get the better.
And I don't bring it up to try to embarrass you.
No, I think people should have a full picture for your.
I just think that the Chris Finney I know is that you have, and I was wondering. That's why I asked you. Is it something that you grew from? Because you're someone who does get criticized regularly, and I see you as someone who has a thick skin, and you take the criticism really well.
Like I say, I'm not even in the arena that much anymore, except legally. So they need to do what they need to do to get elected, I guess. And I saw that with Gwen McFarland took us on recently on the Gang of Five case. They wanted to somehow turn the bad acts of clearly bad acts of certain members of council as somehow something I had done wrong. I'm like, okay, that you got to do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's
you were not controversial enough. You were not nearly as controversial as I was thinking.
You wanted high ratings for
this. I wanted a rating spike, clicks.
But see, I think that is a misnomer that people think you're this fire and brimstone guy, but when you have a conversation with you, it's like you're just you're a regular guy, and about both sides, and you talk about seeing both sides, and hey, this is, you're confident in who you are, and this is where I stand. These are my beliefs. These are my core values, and I'm going to fight for them, period. Whether you agree with that or not.
I choose the forum within which I do those fights now.
Exactly.
He says with a sheepish grin.
Well, I appreciate you for choosing our forum to chat with us. This is great catching up with you. Absolutely.
It's an honor. I love your guys' reporting, and somehow, is it the Fourth Estate? Needs to survive because somebody has to hold these guys accountable, and that accountability mechanism is diminished if you guys can't keep their feet to the fire. So keep plugging away.
Could not agree with you more. Thanks, Chris. So much, Chris, for joining us. Great having you.
Thanks, guys.
Much thanks to Chris Finney for joining us. That's of Cincinnati. Great to have him come in. Yeah, I just am always, I'm struck by some, he is so consistent in that this is what I'm here to fight. I'm here for, hey, and he even wished us good luck. But I think that what the Inquirer is all about, and what he's all about, there are so many similarities, and it's a matter of just wanting everything to be out in the open and everything to be clear. And, you know, he's obviously anti-tax, and that's the core of everything that where he starts from. But I mean, the wanting transparency in everything and to know where money's going and have it be used wisely and everyone understanding what's going on, they're really, you know, it is a similar fight in a lot of ways.
There are, on the flip side, there are critics who are people who are critical of Chris Finney and Coast, you know, because they pick and choose. And here's a good example. Where was Coast and Chris Finney on the FC Cincinnati stadium when FC Cincinnati came asking City Hall and the county for money? Well, it turns out Chris Finney had been hired by FC Cincinnati to do real estate law work. And so, I mean, that's totally fine. But the critics would say, so you pick and choose and you're inconsistent at times.
Right.
On the flip side, he's a private citizen. I think that you can say that from an open government standpoint, purely open government standpoint, Coast has done really good work on that. And I think City Hall and some of these small suburban burgs and school boards are the level of accountability has been heightened because of the work Coast has done.
And when he comes on, it's a perfect opportunity for us to reference our old friend, the streetcar.
And we didn't even get into that.
Not really.
You know, he got
it out there. But he got his point in, though. There was no, I mean, he stuck that in.
I mean, he was right in the middle of fighting two referendums on that. And those are some of Coast's few losses, actually. Obviously, the streetcar is here, and Coast fought like hell to kill that. And
yeah,
it didn't happen. I want to kind of point one thing out.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we talked about him telling David Pepper to kiss his backside.
Keister.
Yes. It's only fair that I point out that Chris Finney, apologized for that. And to this day, they've had a cordial working relationship. Obviously, they're on two different sides of the political spectrum, but he did the right thing and apologized.
Sometimes you can tell somebody something that you wish you wouldn't, or that you meant at the time, and you know, you can still coexist.
So I think it's only fair that I point that.
Yeah. Let's get to it. Remember, if you have emails that you want to send to you, something that you think is That's So Cincinnati, or somebody you'd like us to talk to, or a topic that you think we need to cover, or just a question that you have, you can send it to Jason. Where can they send that, Jason?
jwilliams@inquirer.com.
Yeah, or you can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Paul Daner Jr. Jason is at jwilliamscincy. With a Y. You can hit us up on that. We do have an email this week. Who's our email from?
Our email's from Bill Lutz in Troy, Ohio. Good to have people listening outside of the greater Cincinnati area. And Bill asks, I have kept close tabs on the texting scandal that hit the Cincinnati City Council, and I had one quick question. I was wondering if any of the texting happened during meetings. As far as I know, Bill, thanks for your question. The group texts did not occur during any actual scheduled public meetings. The group texting, which was the violation of the open meetings law, those took place outside of the typical committee, in-person committee, and Wednesday afternoon city council meetings. Regarding the individual text messages that have also come out that we've talked quite a bit about here on this podcast, I am not actually clear on. I do believe some of those actually took place during some public meetings where individual council members were texting back and forth in the middle of an actual council meeting.
What I do enjoy about this text conversation that will never go away is that how much it does bring to light things that just the normal person in their business do all the time and don't even think about now. Everyone listening right now has been in a meeting where they've texted someone else in the meeting with something like, oh, can you believe what we're hearing right now?
Right.
Or something positive, whatever. Well, but usually, let's be honest, usually it's look at this. We've all done that.
We've all
been there. So I enjoy bringing those lights. So everybody listening right now, think about what you've sent in a meeting. There's some good stuff in there.
Yeah.
There is.
Yes.
Let's get to our That's Cincinnati moments. Thank
Cincinnati.
I was thinking about this, okay? And I was trying to think about my So Cincinnati moment of the week. And I had a couple that were decent, but we're not going to get to those because actually, right before we recorded, we record these on Tuesday afternoons and they post every Wednesday morning. We had massive news happen on the Cincinnati scene, on the Cincinnati sports scene. And Mick Cronin going to UCLA, and it just occurred to me, you know what's so Cincinnati is the fire the coach, fire the manager guy just screaming and yelling, and apparently what's so Cincinnati is that guy getting their way. Think of the kind of year that fire the coach, fire the manager guy is having around our city right now.
He's excited.
Brian Price, deuces. Riggle, deuces.
Wriggle.
Marv, deuces. Chris Mack left for Louisville. Mick, who's
gone.
Who really, you know, let's be honest here. He's leaving what he thought was his dream job in his hometown.
Yep.
He is so Cincinnati. Was so Cincinnati. He left that. Partially because he never felt appreciated by people here in the city, rightfully or not rightfully. We can criticize the postseason failures and laud the regular season success in the same breath. But think about that, man. That is across all sports here.
It is.
All major sports here. I mean, fire the manager guy is loud. They are... they're vocal and they're unrelenting, and they have worn some people down. They have worn down two of the biggest entities, three really, and I go back to Dusty Baker.
Ugh. I love Dusty.
All he did was win games and lose in the postseason. Sounds familiar as well.
That does sound familiar.
But worn down franchises, the major sports franchises in this and the top people at the top there, worn them down. Dusty, Marv, Mick, you name it.
Well, you got to wonder if the Reds don't start winning. They're going to start.
Oh, yeah. That's
as we sit here, they've lost 8 straight, haven't won since opening day.
Yeah.
Going on 2 weeks now.
1-8, not great.
I think David Bell could go 3-159.
It'd be kind of odd considering we just came off a year where everybody bemoaned their 3-18 start. If you take that out, they would have been whatever they would have been, near 500.
Right.
And now they're about to start 3-18 again.
Ooh.
And when they created optimism. Well, yeah, exactly. So
the fire the manager guys.
They are loud and vocal and so Cincinnati.
We might start hearing them more here if the Reds don't pick up a couple W's next few weeks.
Do you have anything? Do you have a so Cincinnati moment or your curmudgeon moment of the week?
No.
How's the faucet? We need more duct tape.
So
what happened
Saturday? Well, no, it's still okay. Saturday we did our spring cleaning of our garage. First time we've done it. We moved there 2 years ago and we cleaned the garage for the first time this past Saturday, and at one point I had to go over to the outdoor faucet to wash something off. I go over, I took the little styrofoam protector thing off that I put on there to kind of keep it from the elements. And I noticed some water beading up on the black duct tape. And I'm like, ooh, I'm going to need to get some more duct. I left it because I'm like, let's see how much longer this can go. It was like it was sweating. It was like sweat on your skin. That's what it looked like. And so I'm like, I'll let it go.
So you haven't gone back in on it yet?
I haven't gone back in on it. But I'm like...
You can start to see it.
Yes. It's like little sweat beads.
Oh, man. Well, look, when it starts just flooding your entire house, please take some video and post it on Twitter so that I can retweet it to everybody.
No, when that starts happening, I'm calling my neighbor, Charlie Janigan, who says he's coming over. He's an expert at home plumbing repair. And I'm calling him.
You're being counted on, Charlie. Hope you're listening. The stakes are high. Get it together. All right. That's going to wrap up this week on That's a Cincinnati Reminder. Look, we're on iTunes. We're on Google Play. Wherever is your preferred podcast platform, you can find us. Search That's So Cincinnati. Subscribe. Please leave us reviews. We appreciate all of them. The more reviews you leave, the more, subscriptions, tell your friends. The more we get, the more people will see it. We'll rise up the rankings and more people will know it. So if you like it, tell us about it. Retweet it. Put it up on the Facebooks. All the things. Art, we're about to have some pictures of us are going to start circulating too. Yeah,
hey, can I say one more thing?
Go ahead.
Since we reference him quite a bit here on the show every week, Burl, I want to congratulate Burl.
Yeah.
Love. Our executive editor of the Inquirer, Cincinnati.com, was inducted this past week into the University of Cincinnati Journalism Hall of Fame.
How about that? Congratulations. That's awesome.
Congratulate him on it. Yeah, it's a cool honor. And certainly for a school that for up until recent years didn't have a set journalism department program, there's been a lot of folks still come out of UC having majored in other things to have gone on to great things in journalism, and Burl is certainly one of those, so congrats.
How many Hall of Fames are you in, Jason?
Nil.
No?
You think is there any conversations? Doc will start referring to Burl as the famer?
I hope so. We need that. I mean, how many people in our newsroom are in any Hall of Fame anywhere?
Maybe I'm in the curmudgeon Hall of Fame.
Yeah, or like, you know. What Hall of Fame could you be? I think I could make it with considering the success of the Daner Cornhole Classic entering its 18th year. I feel like I could end up in the Cornhole Hall of Fame if they ever made one, which if they did make one, I would assume it would be on the West Side somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be great. Oh, I could end up in the McDonald's eating Hall of Fame. By the way, Polly gave some love to McDonald's Filet Fish. Do you see that?
I did not see that. I'm sure it's delightful. Have you been to a fish fry yet?
Give me back. Fish, give me that filet of fish. Give me that fish. Remember that? You don't remember that? You don't remember that commercial?
I don't like you singing it.
Don't you remember that little wall bass that
we're trying to keep people? We're not trying to get rid of them. Everyone just turned off. They're like, that's it. Sorry. Delete forever.
Can you ask me a question as I was trying to sing?
No, I don't even care anymore.
Oh.
You ruined my appetite. You ruined my energy level. Now I just want it all to end.
Okay.
All
bye.
Right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to That's a Cincinnati. We will talk to you next week. Have a good one, everybody.